I'm Adam.
And I'm Mike.
Welcome to The Dad Experience,
a podcast where dads can connect
and openly share stories.
Here's what to expect on this episode of The Dad Experience.
And my friend noticed that I probably should have a job and have more money. And she said, my kid, who he was two or three at the time, we're supposed to entertain their entire class. Every student has to bring the rest of the class to their apartment once per year, and the mom or dad reads them a book. She's like, why don't you come instead and sing them a song? I'm like, that's crazy. I'm not going to do that. She convinced me.
Dad Experience.
Welcome to another great episode of the Dad Experience. Very excited about this one, not only because it's more music and children's music, which we love on this show, but another Michigander, a musician on the show. Really excited about that. Today we have Randy Kaplan on. Randy is a musician and an educator. He's a three-time recipient of the ASCAP Plus Award. He's released 8 albums for adults and has just released his 7th album, Not Just for Kids and Family, called Shake It and Break It. Randy has been featured on many top 10 lists and publications, including NPR, People Magazine. So without further ado, we'll get right at it. And Randy, welcome to the Dad Experience.
Thanks, Adam. How you doing?
Not bad, not bad. Really excited to have you. So we always start every episode off with finding out who lives with you at home. What is the makeup of your household?
I live with my wife and son and the ghost of my late dog, Virginia Halfwolf. And who knows what other assorted creatures and insects abound throughout the house.
So tell us a little bit about, I'm really excited to hear, because you're a Michigan person, but you're a recording artist, and we have a lot of recording artists from Michigan, but we don't get tons of recording artists. What made your way back to Michigan versus the big, kind of record industry cities like New York or Los Angeles or Nashville? Why did you choose to come back to Michigan?
I've definitely done my time in New York City and environs, like Brooklyn, some other boroughs, and spent a lot of time, many years in Los Angeles. My wife and I had a baby when we were living in Los Angeles, and after a couple of years, we thought it would be better to be around family, and so we thought New York, where my family's from, or Michigan, where her family's from. Michigan won, and I'm glad it did. It's beautiful here, and Detroit also has a great, great recording history. One of my favorite blues artist is from here, John Lee Hooker. Well, he's from Mississippi, but he moved to Detroit when everyone else was moving to Chicago and carved out a big name for himself here, John Lee Hooker. So I actually do one of his songs on my new release. Once you have a niche established for yourself, you can pretty much do it from anywhere.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. It is. And, I'm not giving enough credit to the Metro Detroit area, because there are some great recording artists from this area. And there is, one of the biggest recording labels started out here with Motown. So, I can't sell it too short. So it's not a bad place for music.
Right. And of course, Jack White of the White Stripes obviously is here. I even played a show I saw at his record shop here, a kid's show.
Nice. Nice.
Same stage as the next week. I saw Jonathan Richman play there, so it's very exciting.
Stuff yeah, going so on. There is a lot of great music and a lot of great things going on. So you're a musician. Obviously, we've been talking about that. Tell us a little bit about why you wanted to create music and share music for children, and why it's so important.
Well, it wasn't ever a long range plan for growing up. Like when I got into music, I tried, like everyone, to be a rock star for 20 years, and I fell into kids' music by accident, and sort of admittedly against my will at first, but very quickly it became something that I was passionate about and loved, and I knew I'd found my niche there. It was perfect match. Children are all amazing geniuses. Their minds are open, and they're curious, and they're natural learners, and they're funny, and it's just, they're a great audience. They can't insult you, even when I get heckled by little kids, even a harsh heckle, such as "this song stinks." It doesn't. If an adult said that, you'd know there's all this other attached weirdness to it. But a kid, it's just charming, whatever they do. And they helped me actually write a lot of my early songs were based on improvs I had with kids. That's one of my favorite things in live shows, to actually interact with the audiences. I see parents sometimes saying like, "Be quiet, don't interrupt him," but I'm like, "Let him do it. I love it." I could a 2-minute song could be a 10-minute song, and it's not boring if kids are actually participating and I'm responding. And, you know, you're led down this road that you would never be able to create or predict by yourself. Just the interaction with kids is what's magical. You know, this weird verbal, you know, thing. It's quite something.
Yeah. Yeah, no, and it is. It's kind of like there's a reason why, I don't know if you remember back in the day, and they kind of re-released it, but there was the Kids Say the Darndest Things, and it's kind of why, I mean, the success of that show just kind of just, you know, illuminates what you just said. I mean, the kids are just, they are so creative and so outside of the box thinkers that, you know, at some exactly. point that changes. So it's mm-hmm. so neat to get that creativeness, because some of those great ideas that they have turn into some of the best moments, I would imagine.
Definitely. They things that you assume are literal, they take figuratively. Some figurative language they take literally. It's all in play. And they're just like natural deconstructivists, you know, which is fascinating. Yet they're also meaning makers, so they got it all.
Yeah. So, you know, you talked a little bit about this, but where you said it when you kind of do some bantering with some of the children in shows or whatnot, but how do you get your ideas from your music? Does any of it come from your own parenting experiences, or is it, you know, just something that you just sit down and you do? Kind of how does the children's music come about, and what is the creativeness behind that?
Yeah, they're all, as I tell kids, say, did that really happen? I say, everything I say is absolutely true. It just depends how you interpret the word truth, you know. But, you know, it's emotionally true. And definitely most of the songs that are about parenting came from my experience. Sometimes they're exaggerated, or just they're an idea that I thought about that after some parenting experience. You know, I have on the new record, Crow Jane, I don't have a daughter, but the song is about a father putting a daughter to bed in the crib. But a lot of those things, it just so happened the old Skip James song is called Crow Jane. So I made the girl and the baby in the song named Jane. But it's all experiences from putting my son to bed when he was 1 year old. And we had like, he has to be in the crib with no pillows. And my wife has all the exact modern current things that you're supposed to do. And it's about my exasperation with putting the kid to bed in like an environment that has to be just so. And it's funny. So that's clearly, Jane is not my daughter, but in the song, she's a stand-in for a former version of my son. And all that stuff came from experience. Same thing with It Hurts Me Too, being, you know, we're all empathic toward our children. They get hurt and we actually feel it. It's a vicarious aching, as I say in the song. And, you know, so a lot of these songs are combined experience. When I do a Delta blues or a country blues album like this, where I'm reworking pre-World War II songs, the songs I love come first. And then some parenting experience or life experience happens. And I say, oh, that's kind of a, you know, funny parody of that song. And then it develops that way. Other songs just come mm-hmm. from crazy ideas or experiences or interactions with children, as we talked about.
Right. Well, that's so neat and so refreshing to hear that kind of all goes along into what you do. So, you know, kind of the flip side of that is, you know, how do you incorporate music into your household? Is it a kind of a daily occurrence? Is it something before bed? Or, you know, how do you guys utilize music within the house?
It's all of that. I mean, I have like a standard set of three songs that I sing my son every night, the three that are the go-to songs to calm him down and get him to sleep. But sometimes we'll just sing for hours before bed. It's mostly me. And back before he could understand language, it didn't matter what I sang. Now he's starting to, you know, I like all these wailing and drinking songs from Ireland and Scotland and England. Now he's starting to go, so why did the friar sleep over the maiden's house? I'm like, uh-oh, he's listening to the words now. I have to kind of start changing them. So now I'm going to rework some old Irish songs to be kid songs. I did one on an early album called The Darby Ram, but now I'm thinking of ways to change so that they're kid appropriate, because that's another genre of music I love, these old wailing and drinking folk songs from the old country. So I'm going to try to make some kid songs out of those. But yeah, we sing all the time. And it's great to see my son. He's a natural linguist. You know, he breaks into raps and songs, some nonsensical, some sensical all the time. And I remember discovering the pleasure of wordplay and puns and everything. So we sing a lot and make up songs all the time. I don't play guitar and right. sing as often as I used to before I had a baby with a child and a wife, because that was what I was alone in my apartment. That's all I did all day. Now there's like, oh, I haven't played guitar in 2 weeks. It's weird. You know? But we do try to sing all the
right,
time.
Right. So, Right. So has your son been involved in any of the writing experiences? Like, have you ever had him kind of sit down and either A, listen to what you've done before you kind of record it, or B, you know, bounce ideas off of him and maybe kind of create?
Definitely he participates in, you know, and comes up with ideas that I incorporate. He wrote a song himself that I didn't even know he wrote, called Mommy Love Song. He marched into my study one day and said, put on the mic, I want to record this. This is we released it. I think it's on Tripping Around the Mitten, the album before this one. And I pushed record and I'm like, you want me to strum some chords? He's like, all right, if you want to. And he had it all planned out. The song didn't turn out to be about mommy or love. It's all about Candy and Robin Banks. So I don't know what was going on in his head, but it's pretty funny how he had this whole tune and, you know, melody planned out. So that was good. He hasn't taken any formal music lessons, but he walks around with a guitar, and I've given him some casual piano lessons disguised as, you know, secret mission things that he has to do on the keyboard. So, you know, he's getting a basis.
Right. You know, and sometimes, you know, I come from a musical family. My mom is a music teacher. Obviously, I'm a music teacher too by day. And, you know, I never took, she would always help me, but I never took lessons. There's something about, you know, sometimes it's hard. Sometimes it's fun to be able to run things by them, but sometimes I feel like it's hard. I don't know that me personally, if my kids want to get involved in something musical, obviously I'll be there to help them and be able to give them input. But if it's not an instrument that's my main instrument, definitely I would probably get them lessons, and maybe even so still get them lessons, just because there's something different when you're working with somebody else outside of the family. So I know that I always experienced that. And it's, you know, some of the basic stuff came from what my mom did. And obviously there's the reason why I did it. But, you know, I think there's something to be said too about getting some lessons from someone else and kind of, you know, honing in your craft a little bit.
Definitely. Yeah, so it applies to tennis lessons and stuff. I'm like, I'll just play with him, but it is better when he has some outside instructor who he has to answer to. It's much better. But when they get older, I can't wait to talk music theory with that. You know, I teach high school English, but I do music a little too. I had one 12th grader who didn't use he had a week internship, and he wound up doing it with me. And I'm teaching, he could play heavy metal guitar like I could never play, but he has no idea what he's doing theory-wise. So that's always edifying to teach a student music theory, so they could save themselves so many hours in the future, because they could eliminate 90% of random ideas and know what they want to do, you know, once they know what is possible.
No, yeah, absolutely. I've taught music theory a few times, and some of the stuff that the students end up creating after the fact, is after they've learned the basis, is amazing. And usually the best students aren't always necessarily the ones that I have in my band class. They're the ones that are just itching for creativeness and just to in creativity, and just to find an outlet. And sometimes that just opens a whole door for them, I've found, which is pretty neat, because you don't always necessarily find it in your top band student in your school. Sometimes it's that kid that plays the heavy metal guitar, or the kid that's writing raps and making, right, you know, beats on Fruity Loops or whatever. It's just kind of, so it's pretty neat that music can kind of reach all aspects. You can reach that band kid, but you can also reach that kid that may not be successful, right, somewhere else, exactly, because it's just a different part of your brain and something different than they're used to. So
misperception, some people are resistant to music theory because they think that will curtail their creativity, but just the opposite is true. Once you learn music theory, you're even more creative, assuming that you understand there are no real hard and fast rules. Music theory is just, hey, they do this a lot, and this is what happens when you do this, and then you can use that as tools to help your creativity, not to fence you in or anything.
So we talked a little bit about at the top of the show how you kind of got involved in children's music, and it wasn't totally your first idea of what you were going to do. So you can kind of expand a little bit on that and how you got into creating children's music and becoming a children's artist.
Sure. I was living in Brooklyn at the time and, you know, hacking away, still trying to be a successful rock star. And my friend noticed that I probably should have a job and have more money. And she said, oh, my kid, who he was two or three at the time, we're supposed to entertain their entire class. Every student has to bring the rest of the class to their apartment once per year, and the mom or dad reads them a book. She's like, why don't you come instead and sing them a song? I'm like, that's crazy. I'm not going to do it. But she convinced me. And so I sang a few songs to these kids, and
it was fun. And the teacher said, we really liked you. Our music guy is quitting. It's perfect timing. Why don't you do that, try out for the job? And I resisted and said, that's crap. I'm not going to do that. But again, I wound up doing it and getting the job and loved it immediately and found that this was my niche and I could play all my old blues songs and make up crazy stories. And it was creative and satisfying and work came in and it was fun. That's how I found this particular mission in my life, in that circuitous way.
Nice. No, and it's so neat to hear that sometimes that are the things that we become most passionate about aren't always just laying there in front of our face. Sometimes it's there, but sometimes it has to take some sort of door to open, or the planets have to align to kind of figure out, wow, that's kind of what we were meant to do or what we're meant to be. Well, this is a great place for us to take a short break. Don't forget that the Dad Experience is a part of the Parents On Demand Network. You can get our podcast on their app along with many other parenting podcasts and get that app at the Google Play Store or the iTunes Store, and stick around after this episode to hear about another great podcast from the Parents On Demand Network that if you love the Dad Experience, we're sure you're going to like. So stick around. We're going to talk a little bit more with Randy about his music and creating and just all things that have to do with parenting. So stick around after the break. Welcome back to the Dad Experience. We're here with Randy Kaplan. Randy is a musician. He's a children's musician. He also has some albums for adults. Just been talking about creating and the importance of creating and just being a dad and being a parent. So we're going to kind of continue on. So you have, you had a new album that just came out, Shake It and Break It. Can you kind of give us a little bit of an elevator speech about how that album came about and why you created this album that just came out?
Sure. I've always been interested in country blues, Delta blues, ragtime music from the old timey music. And I made my big, epic record from 2012, the only record that was ever released by a record company that wasn't mine. It was released by Universal and My Kazoo. So that record was my first foray into a kid's music with recreating and randyizing, as they say, these Delta blues and country blues and ragtime songs. But it was a big production with full band and 20-page liner notes. And I love the album. It's one of my favorite things I've ever done. And there's like a blues man talking on it and interviewing and introducing the songs. But I wanted to do a pared down kind of sequel where the guitar playing was more featured, which is the kind of blues I like. I wind up being attracted to old, listening to Blind Boy Fuller and Blind Blake and Robert Johnson, guys who rarely recorded with other people. And just their guitar picking was the whole orchestration with the alternate bass, thumb finger picking and stuff. So I did this record as a sequel, and it's very pared down. It was going to be just solo guitar originally, but I wound up having a couple of I play slide guitar in it, so does my friend played a slide guitar, Mike West, the producer. He also added some banjo and mandolin, but half the songs are just solo guitar and voice and harmonica, and there's some sound effects. So it's a very pared down acoustic record. And I revisit some of my favorite blues men that I did in whose songs I played on Mr. Diddy Wah Diddy in 2012, and I added some more. I added a John Lee Hooker song and a Skip James song and a bunch of others.
Right. Yeah, it's a great album. I've had a chance to listen to it. I know my kids and I have listened to it. It's a great album. It's a lot of fun. And it's just all around good music. And what's nice is you're creating music that, sometimes we get children's music that's very, very, either one, they're all the old nursery rhymes that we're used to hearing, or two, they're just, always kind of, not that I want to say a lot of the music is cheesy for kids, but there's a lot of stuff that's just kind of fluff. So it's nice to hear, I'm always as a dad and as a parent, and maybe it's the music background, trying to find music that's not necessarily written specifically for kids, but finding a piece of music that's an older song, maybe whether it's a Beatles song or a Rolling Stones song or, something from the Delta blues or, some sort of jazz tune that the children can relate to, but it's an original piece of music. That's a good piece of music there's something behind it that you can learn from it as well as just enjoy it. So it's a breath of fresh air. Now, do you do that a lot with your music, or do you a lot of your own original stuff as well? Or do you kind of have that, all that into one?
For records like Mr. Diddy Wah Diddy and Shake It and Break It, they're all adaptations, all of them, 100% of the songs, or straight covers. I do Swingin' on a Star, which isn't really a blues song, but I kind of cram it into that category here, just like Dave Van Ronk did with the song. But I added the animal voices so that it's more, I hate to say politically correct because I'm not a fan of political correctness per se, but the song is really, we don't say those things about people anymore that, you know, Johnny Mercer and Jimmy Van Heusen did back then, however you pronounce his name. So we added the animal voices defending themselves, you know, with more of a growth mindset than a, and you know, than a closed, you know, entity or fixed mindset mentality. So we add, so I add some stuff, but yeah, but on records that aren't concept records, I do 50 to 75% of originals, I'm guessing, just thinking about it, and then some covers and adaptations. But yeah, I'm still writing originals and ballads and story songs and novelty songs and funny story songs for the most part.
Yeah, and outside of your music for your family, what's your kind of go-to for music for the kids? Is it popular music? Is it, you know, blues music, or is it other children's artists? What do you guys kind of share in that in your household with music when it's outside of what you're doing?
So much. We listen to so much. I mean, we listen to Kids Place Live because that's my, you know, that's the station that plays me. So we listen to that a lot. We listen. My son and I in the car listen to either that or Wow in the World, Mindy Thomas's NPR podcast with Guy Raz. But then as far as other music goes, I've shown him everything from, I'm a big fan of Calypso. And as I said, the Irish and Scottish and British folk songs. I also love blues, jazz, rock, classic rock, any old timey music, bluegrass and fiddle music. But I also love Broadway and opera. And so there's not much that I don't like, and slowly but surely, the more exposure to different types, the better. Then he'll discover what he wants to hear much more of, like I did as a kid. You know, hearing everything. I don't want him to like be unfamiliar with any type of music. No, I never heard this. What is this? Of course, there might be new genres, and I can't cover everything. I love bossa nova. I don't know if I've played him much of that yet. That's a good idea for later.
Right. Yeah, no, I think it's super important to, you know, I grew up the same way. I grew up listening to Broadway, listening to classic rock, listening to rap, listening to, you know, 80s music, whatever it may be. I always listened to everything, and it helps you kind of find what you like. And not only that, it's kind of like the way that I even look at it, the way I teach my students, and I don't know about you. But I don't necessarily want them to be consumers of music. Most of my kids that are in my classes aren't necessarily going to go and be a music teacher or go perform as a musician. You know, some of them may, but what I want them to do is be able to listen to a piece of music critically and say, hey, you know, I may not love this band or love this artist or love the message, but wow, it's a well done song and there was thought put into it. And this is why it's such a great song and it's structured well. So I think that's important. And I think that does come with a lot of listening to everything, not just one specific genre. So, you know,
exactly. I couldn't agree more. That is so well said. And it applies to what I teach too in English. The thing I dislike the most is when a student just dismisses, you know, a teenager dismisses John Steinbeck as terrible. You know, I'm like, listen, you don't have to like John Steinbeck, but let's look at how the text works. And then we're not interested in necessarily your personal opinion, but you could say something that is negative about it, back it up with evidence though, and know what went into it and how it functions. The same thing with a piece of music. And you mentioned two genres that I love that I didn't in my earlier spiel here, which is rap, hip hop music, and also 80s music. That was the prime thing I listened to growing up. I was like a top 40 mid 80s guy in high school. And rap and hip hop, of course, I've made forays into that area. And that seems to be the thing that my son has taken to. He loves speaking in like a rap voice and rhythm and says things that sometimes make sense and sometimes do not make sense, but they're all rhymed and in a kind of rhythm, which is great to hear.
Yeah. And there's so much you can do with it too. When you're teaching phonics and teaching language, I know just specifically when I do some songwriting stuff with my students, I mean, we talk about alliteration, we talk about personification, we talk about assonance. I mean, there's so much that you can do with your kids. And, you know, obviously I'm speaking at an older age level, you know, high school, junior high, but there's so much that can be learned just from music that they love. I mean, one of the most profound lessons that I ever had in college, actually, believe it or not, was a professor that talked about the how Eminem writes his lyrics for rap lyrics and all the different, you know, literary things that he does within language and and how he uses the different styles of language that I never thought about because I only consumed it. And I only looked at the surface. And then, but when you take a deep dive into it, it's like, wow, I like this music. Well, why do you like the music? Well, because this is what's going on.
Right.
Those things you learn about in school, you know, that happens. He had to pay attention somewhere to go, wow, this stuff makes sense and it can lend well and I can be so much more creative. So
yeah. Amen. And also someone will say, well, he doesn't know, like it's like we say in New Criticism, it doesn't matter. Like if Eminem is just a natural prodigy genius, then he says he doesn't know what he's doing. It doesn't matter. It's in the text. And only like a very rare person can do all what he does without knowing. If he happens to be that person, I don't know him and I don't know enough about, but his lyrics, however inappropriate, they're great and so well crafted. And even if he right. doesn't know what we're talking about, which he probably does, but even if he didn't, it doesn't matter. It's in the text and it's there to analyze. And for anyone else that wants to write like that, you have to understand how he does it in order to do it yourself. I sometimes will take a rap song that appeals to me. Like I took Ice Cube's song, Today Was a Good Day. And I basically just took that format, that structure, and hung my own words on it for my song, The Kid Is All Lid. Now, no one would ever know because maybe I'm not imitating it that closely or that successfully. But I tried basically to do that exact song with my lyrics and make it into chords rather than just a rap. No one would ever know it from listening to the song. But now that you know that, if you go back, you're like, oh, look, he just basically ripped off that structure, that rhyme structure. And of course, it's not ripping it off. It's the content's not ripped off, but the format. I was like, how did he do that? You know, and I went and found out what he did. And I never would have done that instinctually or with my own natural creativity. And I said, oh, now I could use my creativity and bring my stuff to bear on his format. And then I got this song, you know, so you could, if someone could take an Eminem song and they think it's just natural, his rhymes are complex. His meter is complex. It's magic. It's amazing.
Yeah, no, it is. And I think there's somewhere at some level, maybe not when he was starting out, but there's got to be, you know, an understanding for the language and the set of it's just so, and I mean, maybe he is, maybe he's just that great at what he does, but there's got to be an understanding and the theory behind it, because man, it just, when you do break that stuff down and a lot of artists are like this, it makes a lot of sense. Cause if we rhymed, you know, cat and hat all the time, our music would get boring pretty quickly. And cheesy at times. So I think that people are onto that and hip to that. And I, you know, hopefully that more folks will kind of look into that and create and expand. So before we close out today's episode, we always do a reoccurring segment, things we can't wait to see or share through our children's eyes, something that may have happened, something you're looking forward to re-experiencing, and kind of reliving your childhood again. So is there something out there that you're excited to share with your son or relive again and see again, or an activity? It can be music, it can be whatever, you know, just is there that one thing that you're just really excited to do?
It's amazing. So, some of them, I got to be careful now because some I was overweening and I did it too early. Like I tried to hold off Disneyland or Disney World as long as possible, but then my in-laws took us there for one day when we were in Florida. And I was just so excited to bring my kid on Pirates of the Caribbean. I was like, he's going to love it. And he wound up hysterically crying. It was terrifying. So I'm like, okay, yeah. I'll have to wait a little longer for that. You know, I remember with my other friend's son, I was like, he was into like the music of Phantom of the Opera. So I showed him the original Lon Chaney and he started hysterically crying when Lon Chaney revealed his face. You know, so some things you got to be a little careful. But my kid is a natural athlete and he's so good at baseball. And he's really into jiu-jitsu now. I can't wait to take – I took him to a couple of baseball games when he was a toddler. Of course, that was just like for the experience. I can't wait to sit down and watch a baseball game with him where he understands the complexity of the game and I could actually show him where he's interested. He's good now, but if I try to point out like what a pitcher is doing, he's still not at that level. So that's something I'm really looking forward to. And as we talked about before, his discovery of language and punning and wordplay is great. And he's a big reader, which I'm excited to expose him to books that, you know, he can't read everything yet. As he gets older, certain books and films that I remember were eye-opening and mind-blowing when I first read them or saw them, I can't wait to experience that again with him. Even the best teen movies of all time when he's a teenager, I can't wait for that. I mean, I can wait because every moment is precious and we don't want to rush. The time rushes by itself already. Yeah. So that, all that, it's like almost every moment, but some of my childhood memories, some of my childhood memories though, I know he's not going to be, I somehow I finagled my, I got to have a dirt bike when I was
teenager and did jumps in 50 miles an hour in the woods. I don't think he's going down that path. My wife and I won't let him do that, I don't think. So some childhood memories will have to stay within my own mind.
Right. So at, you know, before we close out the rest of the show, what is, where can folks find you? How can they find you on social media? And what do you have coming up in the next few months? Because we're, you know, as this releases, obviously people listen to it later, but as this releases, what do you got coming up in the next couple months where folks can come and see you or find out about where you're going to be and just kind of get your albums and how to find you on social media?
Right. Well, I'm always, always randykaplan.com is my home base. I have Facebook, you know, Randy Kaplan Music. And I have Instagram and Twitter and all that. I think it's just my name or Randy Kaplan Music. But I'm not as active as I probably could be on those. But my website has all my shows and how to sign up on the mailing list. And I have a YouTube channel too, which is Randy Kaplan Music. I got to put out some more. I have a few videos there. More are coming. Coming up, I have, let's see. I have a show here at the Bloomfield Township Public Library on June 24th. We're having, that's kind of the record release show from Michigan. So that's on Lone Pine and Telegraph at 7 p.m. Evening show, summer evening show. And after that, I have some gigs in Grand Rapids. I'm going up to the Upper Peninsula this summer, as I always do, to play the Hiawatha Festival. I have an Ann Arbor gig in August. So, you know, things are still filling out for summer and fall, but randykaplan.com is the place to go to check and keep apprised.
Awesome. Well, thanks again for doing this today. We're really excited to have you on and hear about all the great things that you're doing and all the great music that you're creating with yourself as well as with your family.
Thanks, Adam. You too. Great to talk to you.
All right. Don't forget that the Dad Experience is a part of the Parents On Demand Network. If you have a question about the show or have a question for a past guest or you have an idea for the show or want to be on the show, email us experienceanddad@gmail.com. You can find us at Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. On Twitter, we're Daddy XP Podcast. All the rest of the places, you can find us just by searching the Dad Experience or the Dad Experience Podcast. Thanks so much for joining us on another great episode of the Dad Experience.
This podcast is a proud member of Parents On Demand, a network of high-quality shows for families just like yours. Download our free network app on Apple and Android and listen to your favorite episodes on the go.